I used to think democracy a quixotic quest, now merely Sisyphean. In this special edition of Democracy Here!, we present a 2-hour docudrama based on the Portland Christmas tree trial. Judge King has not released transcripts from the trial, and this script follows closely my court notes. Listen carefully for 4 or 5 clues, adding up to reasonable doubt that there was even a fake bomb in the FBI's white van. Here's Mo Is Shy, narrated by Shahid Hamid.
The Mark O. Hatfield Courthouse is located at 3rd and Main in downtown Portland, directly across from the library and medical tents of the 2011 Occupy camps. Every Occupy day, a father marched in front of the courthouse with a bullhorn and cried, "Free Mamumba! Free all political prisoners!" And a boy called Nameless followed him with a drum. Now a young man stands accused of using the U.S. postal system in furtherance of an attempt to use a weapon of mass destruction. The trial starts with the opening statement of Prosecutor Evan Bishop.
Prosecutor Bishop, your opening statement.
On November 26, 2010, the day after Thanksgiving, thousands of American families attended the Christmas tree lighting ceremony at Portland's Pioneer Square. Little did they know that this defendant had been plotting and scheming for several months to murder them all. The government will present evidence showing that he was intent on violent jihad long before contact with the FBI. He wrote articles for the online zine Jihad Recollections. He felt justified in killing Americans, and he already selected Pioneer Square as his target. The FBI got involved when the defendant's father called to say his son was brainwashed and heading for violent jihad in Yemen. Given this warning, the FBI needed to assess the defendant to see if he was just talk or a real threat to America. During the assessment operation, the FBI kept giving the defendant a way out, but he was determined. He kept completing tasks, including mailing electronics across a state line, viewing a test explosion, and renting a storage unit. He was resolved to commit violent jihad in America, and to prove it to the world, he made a goodbye video. The first undercover contact was on July 30th, 2010, with FBI Special Agent Youssef, posing as an Al-Qaeda recruiter. At this very first meeting, the defendant expressed his justification for killing Americans and his long-standing desire to make war on the West. On August 19th, 2010, the defendant met with FBI Special Agent Hussein, posing as an Al-Qaeda explosives expert. At that very first meeting, Hussein learned that the defendant had been thinking about violent jihad since he was 15. Hussein then only asked him what he wanted. The defendant replied that he wanted to blow people up at the Pioneer Square Christmas tree lighting. He just needed a little help getting things together. On November 26, 2010, FBI special agents picked up the defendant and took him to the van with the bomb. It was made by law enforcement officers to look real and capable of killing thousands of Americans. The defendant picked out the parking space near Pioneer Square. The defendant flipped the toggle switch on the bomb. The defendant dialed the cell phone detonator, thinking that he was killing thousands of Americans. When it didn't work the first time, he dialed the cell phone a second time. Then he was arrested, and Portland was safe.
Public Defender Monet, your opening statement.
On November 9, 2009, the defendant had just turned 18, had taken no action, and had made no statements about violence or jihad. On this date, the FBI contacted this vulnerable youth and initiated their tried and true procedure for entrapment. The defendant was just a regular kid. He was brought up in the U.S. since he was 3. He was involved in mainstream college culture, studying, partying, sometimes drinking too much, and sometimes smoking too much pot. He was active on the internet, where he did express unpopular opinions. However, he was all talk and no action, until the FBI got involved. In November of 2009, over a year before the fake bomb scare. An FBI operative posing as an Al-Qaeda recruiter, Bill Smith, first tried to entrap the defendant. Smith was running an email phishing scheme out of Portland's JTTF office and tried to lure in the defendant. This operative first introduced the idea of taking action in the West when he wrote about how easy it would be to bring any American city to its knees. Although the defendant replied that he wasn't interested, Smith did file a report describing the defendant as conflicted and sad. Being a conflicted and sad teenager is not predisposition to crimes of mass destruction. Yet the FBI persisted. Their second entrapment attempt involved several agents, and still, the defendant did not respond. He did not show any interest in taking action. On June 7, 2010, FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C. gave local agents the green light to target the defendant and use everything they had on him. The full forces of the FBI focused on an immature and troubled 18-year-old. Entrapment is an important defense, and this time the FBI simply went too far.
Court adjourned until 9 a.m.
The morning started with legal wrangling about discovery of evidence. The judge seems to decide what is allowed based on whether it is more probative than prejudicial. He also gave the government until Wednesday morning to turn over documents from August, September, and October 2010 FBI strategy meetings. At 9:20, the jury was seated and sent the judge a note which he read out loud.
Dear Honorable Judge, the jury would like a written definition of entrapment so we can keep it in mind while we listen to the deliberations to help us determine the evidence. Let's proceed for now. Call your first witness.
The government calls FBI Special Agent Milton Trustis to the stand. How long have you been with the FBI and in what capacity?
I've worked 12 years for the FBI, cyberterrorism, counterterrorism, narcotics, a variety of cases.
When did you get involved in this case?
The FBI started this investigation when the defendant's father contacted us in September of 2009.
What was your role in the investigation?
I was in charge of undercover operations. I crafted emails, planned the face-to-face meetings, and participated in post-meeting debriefs.
Who was the defendant's overseas contact?
He was in email contact with Amro al-Ali, who was wanted by the Saudi government on terrorist charges.
Object. Hearsay.
Overruled.
What does this email mean to you?
It looks like al-Ali is recruiting the defendant for violent jihad.
Object. The witness is guessing.
Overruled. He said it looks like.
Al-Ali is recruiting for Al-Qaeda in Yemen, and the defendant wrote back saying, "Just tell me what you want me to do." It also made me nervous that they didn't use normal email, but developed a covert way of communicating. They shared a single email account and exchanged messages in the unsent folder.
Would you call this a Dropbox?
Yeah, this was a Dropbox, and it shows that the defendant was sophisticated in spycraft.
Object. Hearsay.
Overruled.
In June of 2010, do you set up undercover operations?
Yes, the defendant was trying to reach out.
Object. Speculation.
Overruled.
He was reaching out to dangerous people, including Samir Khan, the publisher of Jihad Recollections. Khan was later killed in a U.S. drone strike.
Object.
Sustained. Disregard that last response.
What was the goal of the undercover operation?
The goal of the undercover operation was to assess a terrorist threat. The first action was to draft an email. Agent Chin out of the San Francisco office helped write the first ones in the role of Youssef, an Al-Qaeda recruiter.
Can you read the defendant's email response?
It says, "I have been betrayed by my family and now I can't travel."
And what does that mean?
Object. The email speaks for itself.
Overruled. It is important to know the mindset of the agents.
It means that he will cut ties with his family and wants to fight for the cause. That's why we go ahead with the investigation. We sent another email from Youssef setting up a face-to-face meeting.
What does this next email mean?
This is the defendant's response. He wanted to meet at his mosque. The FBI doesn't go into mosques, so we emailed back and moved the meeting to downtown Portland.
And how did the defendant respond?
He agreed to meet downtown and added that he was going to check me out to make sure I wasn't a spy.
Did that make you nervous?
Yes, we thought he must really be radicalized to be thinking of spies.
Do you recognize this issue of Jihad Recollections?
He shows the cover image of the Twin Towers in flames and a grinning Osama bin Laden.
Yes, the defendant wrote an article in that issue.
What did that make you think?
He wanted to be like Osama bin Laden.
Were you involved in planning the first meeting?
Yes.
Was there a plan to give the defendant four options?
That's right. The options were designed to test his mindset. They ranged from praying to martyrdom. If he chose option one or two, we would have stopped right away.
On November 26, 2010, were you present?
Yeah.
Did you assist in the arrest?
Yeah, we handcuffed him and put him in a vehicle. He was screaming and yelling and kicking. He kicked me in the head a couple of times.
No more questions, Your Honor.
The judge then called a 15-minute recess, and when he got back, he addressed the jury.
I will give a definition of entrapment, and will do so later. Ms. Monet, your witness.
You have a BS degree in psychology?
Yeah.
On December 10th, 2009, you spoke with an FBI source at the defendant's mosque?
Yeah.
And your source was in a position of authority?
Yes, ma'am.
You learned that the defendant was hungry?
Yeah.
That there was discord in his family?
Yeah.
That he was easily manipulated and that he was looking for guidance?
Yeah.
The article written by the defendant was Staying in Shape Without Weights. And this was basically a high school gym class.
He wanted to bring war to the West, like Osama bin Laden.
You testify that the defendant used an electronic drop box to communicate?
Yeah.
This was the same method that General Petraeus used to communicate with his girlfriend?
Yes, ma'am.
And it was ineffective since the FBI intercepted all communications.
Okay.
On June 7th, 2010, you received an email from an FBI superior giving the green light to target the defendant.
We wanted to assess him.
The email uses the word target.
That's what it says.
In June of 2010, you worked on the plan to target the defendant with undercover support from the FBI office in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Agent Shin was the handler for undercover operative Youssef.
He was the contact agent.
On June 14th, the defendant was going to fly to Alaska?
Yeah.
Did you have anything to do with the defendant being put on the no-fly list?
No.
At the airport, he learned that he was on the no-fly list, and he was met by FBI agents.
We were worried that he would join with Al-Qaeda.
FBI agents interviewed the defendant at the airport.
Yeah.
After this meeting, the FBI started 24/7 surveillance on the defendant.
Yeah.
And he only communicated with his friends, not the people you were expecting.
Yeah.
You were familiar with the defendant's full FBI file.
Yeah.
You knew that he was drinking, smoking marijuana, and involved in immodest partying, all inconsistent with Islam.
Yeah.
In your next email on June 28th, 2010, you invoked the name of Allah and religious duty to get the defendant to meet.
What was I supposed to say? I was from the FBI.
All this effort, and still the defendant did not respond.
True.
On June 29th, you wrote Chin again and advised that he was shy around adults, and you wrote, quote, "We are using everything we have on him."
If that's what it says there.
On July 10th, there was still no response, and the FBI crafted another entrapment email. And finally, on July 16th, the defendant wrote back agreeing to meet at his mosque.
Yeah.
He suggested that they take front seats at the mosque and pray together.
Yeah.
The FBI crafted an enthusiastic affirmative response and moved the meeting to downtown Portland.
We don't go into mosques.
You testified that the defendant's next email on July 26th, mentioning spies, was a red flag and showed that he was already radicalized.
Yes, ma'am.
However, you were the first one to bring up the idea of spies.
Huh?
Here is your July 24th email, which reads, "You have to be very careful. There are eyes and ears everywhere."
I didn't say spies.
When the defendant was arrested, undercover agent Hussein was fake arrested and kept screaming.
Yeah.
The defendant was quiet and compliant during the first part of the transport.
Yeah.
Then you said something to him in a foreign language to incite him, and that didn't make it in any of the reports. And the reports were otherwise quite detailed.
I think I said be quiet. Then he kicked me in the head a couple of times.
You just testified that he was quiet before you said something to him. What did you say to incite him?
Object. Asked and answered.
Sustained. Move on.
During the investigation, you had recordings of all the defendant's phone calls, text messages, all of his historic emails?
Yeah.
And FBI reports from 24/7 surveillance?
Yeah.
In all of this information gathering, did the defendant show any interest in bomb making?
No.
In fact, the defendant was only interested in writing. Kind of like, the pen is mightier than the sword.
They never taught me that one.
No further questions.
The judge then cleared the courtroom of public and press to protect the identity of the government's next witness, the undercover FBI agent Youssef. We watched on closed circuit from another courtroom. Lead prosecutor Evan Bishop started with the agent's background.
You've worked for the FBI since 2004 and were previously a software engineer?
Yes.
Did you receive any social science training or training in psychology?
No.
What does target mean?
The person we're investigating.
You started on this case in June of 2010.
Yes.
What information did you have about the defendant?
I only knew his age, that he was a college student, and that he had travel restrictions because he was in contact with dangerous people overseas.
What happened next?
I asked what he was willing to do for the cause.
Then what happened?
I gave him five options. Pray five times a day, get his engineering degree, raise money, become operational, and become a martyr. He responded right away with operational.
What did that mean to you?
He meant get a car full of explosives and blow people up.
How long did the meeting last?
30 minutes, tops.
Did you do a post-meeting debrief?
Yes, with Agent Chin. He wrote up the report, and I signed off on it before I even knew the recorder failed.
When was your next meeting with the defendant?
On August 19th, we got takeout food and went back to the embassy suites to meet with Agent Hussein. He was the Al-Qaeda bomb maker.
Prosecutor Evan Bishop then shows a video from the August 19th, 2010 meeting between the defendant and the two undercover agents, Youssef and Hussein. They are in a hotel room in downtown Portland. The defendant is sitting on the floor surrounded by cartons of takeout food. The agents are standing above him.
My parents wouldn't let me go to Yemen.
Really? How long you been thinking about this?
Yeah, my dad called the FBI about brainwashing. It's hard to live in the West as a Muslim.
You know, you can leave anytime you want. This isn't for everyone.
Yeah, there's no shame in leaving. Not everyone can do this. So what do you want to do? You know Pioneer Square?
No.
So, on November 26th, they have this tree lighting ceremony. If we had a truck, we could...
You want a truck?
That would take like three trucks. This is in your heart.
Back in court.
Why did you say that he could leave anytime he wants?
We wanted him to know that he could leave anytime he wants.
Why did you ask what was in his heart?
Public safety became a concern. I needed to assess his state of mind.
Why did you say that there was no shame in leaving?
We wanted him to know that there was no shame in leaving.
What happened next?
We set up another meeting to assess his mindset.
And this was on August 31st?
That's right.
The government then showed video of this meeting.
You need to mail these components to this address in California, okay?
Okay. We can still get you out if you want. It would take some work, but we can get you out.
You also need to find a place to park the van. It will be a big bomb, so anywhere within 2 blocks is good. We only have 2.5 months to plan this.
No shame. You can stop anytime you want.
You need to get those electronics to California by next week. Can you do it?
In the spring, I'll be married and start a new life. I'll be a good Muslim and pray 5 times a day.
You can pray and write poetry and ride horses every day. I'm so inspired by your writing. The brothers will love your poetry. The van is going to be packed with big barrels of explosives. It will take out a few city blocks or more.
Can you drive a big van, my love?
Yeah, I'm a good driver. Will you be there?
You're going to get a call to pick up the van. You'll park it, then I'll pick you up. The brothers will get you overseas and you will start your new life. You will be an honored poet.
Got anything to burn?
Back in court.
Why are you giving him detailed instructions?
We were afraid he would martyr himself, so we wanted to keep him busy.
Was this the first time you discussed how big the bomb was?
Yes, and he didn't react at all.
Why did you tell him that he could stop, that you could get him out?
We wanted him to know that he could stop at any time.
What happened next?
On September 16th, he mailed the bomb parts to California. On September 24th, he wrote me an email saying that he found his keys. Those were code words he used to tell me that he had found a parking space for the van.
What did his use of code words mean to you?
He was spycraft sophisticated. He had been thinking about this for a long time.
The next face-to-face meeting was on October 3rd in Corvallis?
Yes.
The government then showed video of this meeting.
So, my love, where did you find your keys?
I didn't lose my keys.
So, my love, did you find a place to park the van?
I found a 15-minute parking space in front of Ben Bridges. That way, if someone is parked there, we can just drive around for 15 minutes.
How far is it from the square?
It is right near there.
Okay. Now we need you to rent a storage space for the bomb. You also need to get 4 passport photos.
I couldn't find a timer, but I mailed the rest of that stuff, like you said.
That's okay, my love. I can get the timer.
And Mr. Bishop reviewed this evidence.
Why are the tasks getting more specific?
We wanted to test his resolve.
Did the defendant hesitate?
No. His mind was already made up to kill Americans.
How did you proceed?
We set up the test explosion for November 4th. Local police picked a site outside Corvallis. Hussein and I picked up the defendant at 8:45 in the morning near the Starbucks.
The government then played audio from the car ride.
So what do you want to do after this is all over and you go overseas?
Turn left.
I'm going to have a wife and a horse, and I'm going to write my... Hey, you see that river? That's a nice river. I was supposed to go fishing there last year.
How do you see the war on the West going?
Maybe a bunch of Mumbai-style attacks. Do you think we could stop real quick and...
Allahu Akbar, my son.
You are as close to me as my own head and eyes. So what do you see happening next in the war on the West?
In 100 yards.
I had a dream the other night about some more 9/11 stuff.
Very inspirational. We brought a video camera in case you want to make a video explaining why you're doing this. Of course, it is up to you.
Back in court.
Why talk about overseas?
We wanted to give him something to look forward to. We were afraid he would do something on his own. Martyr himself.
What did you think when the defendant started talking about 9/11?
That scared us. We were afraid he might try something like 9/11, like Osama bin Laden.
Whose idea was it to make the goodbye video?
We brought it up and gave him the choice. He decided to do it.
What happened at the test site?
We wanted the defendant to see what a bomb would do to give him a sense of realism.
The device was detonated?
Yes. It was a huge explosion.
Then you drove back to Corvallis?
Yes. We got lost for like 2 hours each way, so it was a very long day.
What happened next?
The defendant decided to make the goodbye video.
Then showed the video. It starts with the defendant in white robes. He says that he is ready. After a long pause, he says, wait a second, takes off the robes, and has on a military-style camouflage shirt and pants. He starts in Arabic and switches to English.
As your soldiers target our civilizations, we will do the same. How dare you attack a Muslim land? Living in America is a sin. To my parents who held me back from jihad, I will ask you on Judgment Day about your living with the enemy. To my sister, I say, fear God. To my brother, I say, follow my lead.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Court is in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Wednesday morning started with a surprise.
Your Honor, move to dismiss.
Denied. Call in the jury.
The jury filed in, and public defender Lisa Monet began her cross-examination of the undercover agent, Youssef.
You were not the first FBI agent to contact the defendant.
I don't know about that.
Have you heard of Agent Bill Smith?
I've heard of that.
You testified that you were trying to assess the defendant's mental state, and that might have been influenced by earlier FBI contact from Agent Smith.
I don't know about that.
The defendant was not fluent in Arabic.
True.
So you and Hussein could talk behind his back. You knew that he strayed from his religion.
Yes.
That he was familiar with the language of jihad and used it with ease.
I thought he was radicalized.
You knew he was conflicted. He was Salafi and yet drank, smoked marijuana, and fraternized with women, all of which are not consistent with his religion.
Okay.
You knew he was religiously conflicted and provided him with guidance.
Not religious guidance.
Let me remind you of your email. Can you read the highlighted section?
Allah has a good reason for you to stay where you are.
So, you provided religious guidance.
If you say so.
You knew he was poor?
Not that he was hungry.
You knew he wanted to go to Alaska to work.
He wanted to continue on to jihad in Yemen.
You knew he was working two jobs in Portland.
Yes.
You knew he was lonely.
Yes.
Your partner, Hussein, said, I love you to the defendant on their first meeting.
Yes.
He was just 18 when you met him.
He said he was 19.
He was still living with his mother.
Yes.
He had a curfew.
Huh?
He had to be home at a certain time.
Yes.
You talked to him like a child.
I don't agree.
You said you look like you are eating ice cream.
Yes.
That you are a kid.
Yeah, okay.
He was like a son to Hussein.
Yes.
You knew he was easily manipulated.
No, I just learned that last week.
You testified that you were worried that he would do something else, yet he was under massive 24/7 surveillance.
No one told me how much.
In August 2010, the FBI Counterterrorism Division wrote a memo stating that the defendant was not a danger and that he would not take action on his own.
No one ever told me.
Let's see if we can agree what happened on July 30th.
Okay.
That was your first face-to-face meeting with the defendant.
Yes.
It lasted about 30 minutes.
Yes.
You were wearing a concealed recording device.
Yes.
You specifically asked for this device.
I don't recall.
Does this email refresh your memory?
Witness screen only.
Okay.
So you might have forgotten things from 2.5 years ago.
Unless my memory is refreshed by documents.
The recording device you specifically requested somehow failed?
I'm not the electronics expert.
Your handler, Agent Chin, was in the hotel lobby for the first meeting and he could hear you?
Yes.
Agent Chin destroyed all his original notes.
Yes.
There's no tangible evidence from the first meeting. Let's see what we do know. It was the FBI's idea to create the goodbye video.
Yes.
And this video has evidentiary value.
Yes.
So you helped create evidence with an eye to this trial.
He chose the topic. Those were his words.
You cajoled him into making the video. You gave him some options with your finger on the scale.
I wanted him to make the video.
You've made videos in other cases?
Surveillance videos.
On the November 4th car ride to the test bomb site, the defendant decided not to do the video in the U.S.
True.
To wait until he goes abroad.
Yes.
And you changed his mind.
Yes.
And it was easy.
Yes, those were his own words.
Let's take a closer look at that.
She plays a clip of the November 4th car ride to the test bomb site.
You are about to make history, my love. You know, with your background as a poet, you could write a lot for the brothers. Write something nice for your brothers.
You want to write about why you are doing this. It is up to you what to write.
Most people want to do it. And they usually like to write something to their family. You write so beautifully, my love.
Okay. But tell me about the horses again.
This is you and Hussein directing content of the goodbye video.
Yes.
You assigned him the task of making the video.
Yes.
And you described the topics.
Yes.
When you said that you didn't have influence on the video, that wasn't true.
Okay.
Let's have a look at some more evidence you helped create. It was the FBI's idea to have the defendant buy electronics?
Yes.
And you wrote him a shopping list?
Yes.
He didn't know what a toggle switch was?
Not at first.
The FBI provided the money?
Yes.
There was nothing illegal on the list?
True.
Nothing dangerous?
True.
The most difficult item was a timer, and he couldn't get that.
He got most of it.
Earlier, the government argued that the defendant's use of code words, "I found my keys," to indicate that he located a parking space, made him spycraft sophisticated. The FBI gave him those code words.
Yes.
Throughout the operation, you had to make sure he stayed on track.
Yes.
There were, in fact, dozens of agents involved in surveillance, and at the face-to-face meetings, the Portland Police Department provided a full SWAT team.
Yes.
It must have been expensive.
Object. Relevance.
Sustained.
No further questions.
Mr. Bishop, call your next witness.
The government calls Hussein to the stand. How did you get involved in this case?
Agent Chin called me in August of 2010.
What was your role?
I was posing as an Al-Qaeda bomb maker.
How did you start?
We found out that the recorder failed on the first meeting. We wanted to recapture that.
Your first meeting with the defendant was on August 19th?
Yes.
And you wore a body wire?
Yes.
What happened at this meeting?
We started with small talk. It was important to get him to like me so we could get all the facts.
Then the defendant came up with the target of Pioneer Square.
What did he tell you he wanted to do?
He came up with the idea to get a truck full of explosives and blow people up at the tree lighting ceremony on November 26th.
Why did you ask him what was in his heart?
Our goal was to assess, so his mindset was important. He said we have to do something about the attacks on Muslim countries. He felt justified in killing Americans.
Why did you give the defendant positive feedback?
I was playing my role.
Did you give the defendant options?
Yes.
How many times did you say that he could just walk away and there would be no shame?
I told him he could get out at least two or three times. No shame.
Why did you try to talk the defendant out of his plan to blow up Americans?
We wanted to see how determined he was. He never hesitated.
Why did you take him to witness a real explosion?
To give him the sound and smell of a real explosion.
Did the defendant give you anything at the start of this trip?
Yes. A USB drive with the Pioneer Square plan. He came up with a sophisticated plan. He picked out backup parking spaces. He mapped out an escape route to I-5. He was planning this for a long time.
No more questions.
Court adjourned until 9 tomorrow morning.
Thursday morning started with a discussion of admissible evidence before the jury was seated.
Your Honor, our defense depends on the assertion that the agents were not acting to assess the defendant, but rather to craft evidence leading to a conviction. In order to do this, we need to attack the integrity of the investigation. Agent Bill Smith's intent was not deemed relevant and not admitted. Some evidence from Agent Trustis was similarly denied. As you know, after several of the undercover meetings, the agents forgot to turn off their microphones, and the jury needs to hear this. For example, after the August 19th meeting, all of the agents are excited that the kid took the bait. This is the opposite of what the agents are claiming on the stand, that they are sympathetic and were trying to dissuade him.
I'm concerned that these outtakes would be more prejudicial than probative. If you want to impeach the witness, you have to lay the foundation. Ask him, were you excited? And if he says no, then you can play the clip.
The outtakes are important in two ways. Factually, and the tone of the agent's voice is also telling. It shows most clearly the agent's true intent.
The defense needs to ask factual questions. If there's a denial, you can play the clip.
Your Honor, you have allowed the prosecution to show the jury full issues of jihad recollections, complete with images of Osama bin Laden and of the flaming Twin Towers in the 9/11 attacks. The outtakes from undercover meetings are certainly less prejudicial, more probative, and more pertinent. They are independently admissible.
That's not clear.
May I play the tapes if there is a contradiction with testimony?
Only if there is a direct denial. That's my decision. Call in the jury.
Public defender Lisa Monet then began her cross-examination of undercover FBI agent Hussein. Press and public are still sequestered to protect his ongoing cover. Ms. Monet starts by going over the agent's training.
You've worked as a police officer?
Yeah, for like 20 years.
You've been full-time with the FBI since 2004?
Yeah.
You've spent considerable time working in narcotics?
Yeah.
Undercover operations?
Yeah.
You are familiar with informants working their way up the drug chain?
Yeah.
Prior to your first meeting with the defendant on August 19th, you had planned meetings with other agents. Roles were planned out.
Yeah.
Part of the plan was for Yusuf to say that you were a religious person.
I am a Muslim.
You treated the defendant like a kid.
He was an adult.
You asked if he had to be home at a certain time.
Yeah.
You praised and flattered him and called him an amazing 18-year-old.
I was developing rapport.
You are aware that the recording devices were left on after this meeting.
Yeah.
You don't use religious language then.
True.
You testified that the defendant came up with the Pioneer Square plan on his own.
He did.
Let's listen to a clip from that meeting.
My son, I love your poetry.
It is so inspirational. I've been doing this for like 30 years, and I can tell you, you are an amazing 18-year-old. I love you already. So what do you want to do?
Well, last time, me and a brother...
What we discussed is private. You are the diamond in the rough. Just tell him what is in your heart.
Did Yusuf direct the defendant to answer about Pioneer Square?
I wouldn't say that.
If Yusuf hadn't interrupted him, he might have
Object,
said something else.
Asking the witness to speculate.
Sustained.
You testified that you knew almost nothing about the defendant before your first meeting on August 19th.
Yeah.
So you were unaware that the FBI was emailing the defendant since November 2009. That FBI agent Bill Smith first suggested taking action in the West. That the defendant had been under surveillance for a year?
I didn't know about any of that.
You were aware of the July 30th meeting?
Yes.
Where the recorder didn't work?
I'm not the electronics expert.
Did you have access to FBI emails sent in August, September, and October describing the defendant as easily manipulable, religiously conflicted, and in search of guidance? And didn't these emails describe to you in detail what you were supposed to do and say?
I never read those emails.
Did you have access to FBI emails sent in August, September, and October describing in detail what you were supposed to do and say, and weren't these instructions based on the defendant's psychological profile?
I was CC'd, but I never opened those emails.
In August, September, and October, there were
We've
over...
We've covered this, Ms. Monet. Move on.
When the tape recorder is left on, you are out of role.
Yeah.
You talked about what occurred.
Yeah.
You talked about next steps.
Yeah.
After the August 19th meeting, you talked about having the defendant do things in a way that would look sexy.
If that's what it says there.
On September 7th, the tapes were left on again.
Yeah.
And you asked, is everything off?
Yeah.
So you were speaking freely.
Yeah.
And you said, we have enough evidence.
Yes.
You didn't even want to debrief. You said, I'm done here. He's cooked.
If you say so.
Is that what you said?
Object. Asked and answered.
Sustained.
Do you recall discussing the humiliation of Muslims around the world?
In role.
And you reinforce him when he speaks of violence.
I don't think so.
Let's refresh your memory. This is from your first meeting with the defendant.
Do you see where Polish troops shoot Afghan women for fun?
Yeah, just like dogs.
He is very inspirational.
Yes. I love what I see and hear. Is he really capable?
I think so. You know, you can leave anytime you want. This isn't for everyone.
Yeah. There is no shame in leaving. Not everyone can do this. So what do you want to do?
Is this an example of you and your partner giving him an out?
We gave him a way out at every meeting. He was determined to kill Americans.
In the exchange we just heard, you do not even engage the defendant, do you?
I disagree.
In fact, he doesn't say a word.
If he said stop, we would have stopped right away.
You don't give him a chance to respond. You state that there was no shame, and then ask about a task.
I wouldn't describe it that way.
Would it sound that way to the defendant?
That's fine.
Do you recall the defendant talking about being a rapper?
Yeah.
Getting a gangsta gun?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you call that a teenage fantasy?
He sounded dangerous.
Did you promise him a souped-up rapper truck when it was all over?
Yeah.
The sixth time you asked, so how long have you been thinking about jihad? He talked about religion.
Yeah.
And started babbling about riding horses.
Yeah.
Do you remember your partner asking for a seventh time? So how long have you been thinking about this?
I don't really recall.
Let's play that tape of the seventh and eighth time. The defendant was prompted with, "So how long have you been thinking about this?"
"So how long you been thinking about this?"
"What?"
"Look me in the eye. How long have you been thinking about Pioneer Square?"
Since the last time...
"Tell him what is in your heart."
Why did you and your partner ask him 8 or 9 times, "How long have you been thinking about this?" Isn't this part of the FBI's tried and true method of crafting evidence?
I didn't open that email. He was dangerous. We needed to assess his mindset.
The "how long have you been thinking about this" prompt addresses predisposition. The false outs that you and your partner are so good at are scripted to portray determination. A third tried and true prompt is the "what would you do if you never met us" noise. Let's listen to you and your partner work it out.
"We are still going to have to bring this before the council. How do we know we can trust you, my love?" "What would you do if you didn't meet us, my love?"
"I'd go to Yemen and learn Arabic. It is hard to live here. When I fast, my friends, they're all eating. Arabic is a beautiful language for poetry. I don't remember much from before. I'll be a good Muslim and give up all this. Spend my days writing poetry, riding horses. I'll get a wife. Everyone will like my poetry. My horse will have a long rope. And if he breaks free and crosses one hill or two..."
"I don't know if that is going to be enough. My love, you are such a diamond in the rough.
What would you do if you never met us?" "I've got a brother at the embassy there and another brother at the university. Once I learn Arabic better, I can write my poetry for the brothers."
The prompt, "What would you do if you didn't meet us, my love," is part of the FBI's tried and true path to conviction.
I didn't open any of those emails. My job was to assess a terrorist threat.
His first answer was to study Arabic in Yemen.
Yeah.
His second answer is to study Arabic in Yemen and write poetry for the brothers.
Yeah.
On the fourth or fifth, "What would you have done if you didn't meet us?" prompt, he finally says something about weapons.
Yeah.
How much longer would this witness?
A few more questions, Your Honor. This is you and your partner going through a series of prompts until you get something that looks good enough for this jury.
If he said stop, we would have taken him right home.
You were not present at the July 30th unrecorded meeting between Youssef and the defendant?
True.
You don't know what instructions or coaching Youssef might have given the defendant at that meeting?
True.
Were you aware of internal FBI reports labeling the defendant as easily manipulable, religiously conflicted, looking for guidance, shy around adults?
I never open any email. I like to go in cold.
Your perception was the defendant came to the August 19th meeting with a plan?
Yes.
Let's have a listen.
"You see that Danish cartoon?
We can't let the infidels get away with that. Tell him what is in your heart."
"My love, think of your duty to Allah. So, what do you want to do?"
"I like Youssef's idea where we..."
"You are the diamond in the rough. Say what is in your heart."
Does that sound like someone with a master plan?
He was the first one to mention Pioneer Square.
The November 4th test bomb was completely orchestrated by the FBI.
Yeah.
The defendant had nothing to do with this plan.
True.
You say again to the defendant, the less you know, the better.
Yeah.
You were at the site the day before with several other agents.
Yeah.
The FBI constructed the test bomb?
Yeah.
You instructed the defendant to dial the phone?
Yep.
He messed up a couple of times, and you had to tell him the numbers two or three times.
Yeah.
Let's finish up with audio from the car ride back.
Do you know anything about explosives, my love?
No, except for Piccolo Pete. You know, the one you put in a Gatorade bottle?
Piccolo Pete. The one you put in a Gatorade bottle? He is telling an Al-Qaeda bomb maker about Piccolo Pete? Did this make sense to you? Did this make you think he wasn't too bright?
We needed to assess his mindset.
No more questions.
Mr. Bishop, anything on redirect?
Thank you, Your Honor. On the very first meeting with the defendant, who said explosive first?
The defendant did.
How long into that first meeting did he start talking about explosives?
It was 10 minutes into the very first meeting.
All you asked him is, what do you want?
That's right.
Why didn't you have any information going into that first meeting?
I like to go in cold.
In addition to assessing, was your job also to collect evidence?
Of course.
Why do you say he can stop?
We wanted him to know that he could stop any time, that there would be no shame. I really liked him.
Why do you ask him how long have you been thinking about this?
We had to assess his mindset.
No more questions, Your Honor.
Ms. Monet, recross.
You only had to say, what do you want?
Yes.
Do you remember that Youssef then interrupted the defendant?
Yeah.
Instructed the defendant to relate what they talked about in that unrecorded July 30th meeting?
I don't see it like that.
No more questions.
Mr. Bishop, call your next witness.
The government calls Youssef back to the stand. Leading up to the November 26th bomb attempt at Pioneer Square, did the defendant ever hesitate?
No.
What was his demeanor?
He was excited.
Can you go over the chronology on November 26th?
I picked up the defendant in Beaverton. We went to the Home Depot. We met Hussein at the hotel. We all walked down to take a look at the van.
Is this Hussein and Youssef looking at the bomb?
A plain white no-window van viewed from the back. Hussein and the defendant are looking in the open side doors.
Yes, the defendant said he loved the smell.
Then what happened?
We went back to the hotel for a meal.
What did the defendant do the night before?
He told me he went shopping. He was happy.
Why were you nervous?
For the defendant's consequences. We had built a relationship.
When's the last time you saw him?
After arming the bomb at Pioneer Square, they walked to the bike store where I picked them up. They dropped me off at the train station. The defendant seemed at peace.
No more questions, Your Honor.